This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
9 minutes after 11. So if you thought that everything is hunky-dory in Botswana, because that's been, you know, an impression that we've been given for quite a while, that, you know, that they're less tolerant on corruption, they're less tolerant on tyranny, the economy is flourishing, and everything is hunky-dory. Well, Sipho Malunga just burst that bubble for me today, because he penned an article that seems to demystify those particular beliefs, you know, writing an article, taking his time to, you know, deal with those issues one by one, to a point where he even spoke about how, you know, journalists are attacked and targeted, particularly those that expose corruption in that country, because I never thought things like those happens in Botswana. The title of the article is Unmasking Africa's Democracy Poster Child. Sipho Malunga, Sposami Malunga, is the executive director of the Open Society Initiative for Southern Africa, and he joins us on the line. Sipho, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm fine, Tabiso. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You just burst the Botswana bubble for some of us who were content that everything in Botswana seems to be what we've been made out to believe, I suppose. What prompted that, first and foremost?
Well, Tabiso, let me be upfront and say that I really didn't intend to do this, right? It was a painful exercise. Yeah. I've worked on governance issues in the region for many years. Mm. And Botswana has always been, you know, the comfort, the solace, the good news that the continent has. Mm. But the truth of the matter is that I've always been troubled about how good it is. Is it really as good as it looks?
Mm.
And as I was reflecting, you know, on the upcoming election, you know, the controversy that has now arisen.
Mm.
The split between the former president and the current president, which is unprecedented in Botswana, it got me to begin to look more carefully at a whole lot of things. And it really turned out that things are not what they seem. They really never have been. And I can explain why and the journey through which I went to get to that conclusion.
Yeah, go ahead. We are listening.
So what have we always been told? We've always been told that, you know, Botswana is a rich country, right? It's diamond rich, very rich, small population, no corruption almost, or very little corruption. We've always been told that Botswana is democratic. It has regular elections on the clock since 1965, when it became independent.
Mm.
The elections are peaceful. We've always been told that, you know, every 5 years or every 10 years, there's a transfer of power. It's peaceful. The president leaves power a year before the elections, and the new president comes in, contests the elections and wins, and so on and so on. We've always been told that Botswana manages its diamond revenue very transparently.
Mm.
It governs very well. It looks after its citizens. It's got programs for social welfare. But even besides the scourge of HIV and AIDS, it managed to recover and begin to respond in a meaningful way.
Mm.
Now, some of those things are true, but when one starts to look carefully, you know, beyond what we've been told, you begin to find certain troubling, you know, aspects. Every year, the Mo Ibrahim, you know, index ranks countries in the region, in the continent, you know, best governed, worst governed, rule of law.
Mm.
And Botswana is always in the top five, consistently.
Mm.
Botswana has produced two recipients of the Mo Ibrahim Award. I think, if I'm not mistaken, former president, the late Sir Kitumile Masire, and also former president Mokhai, they've won this prize. without any question, and it's given to presidents who voluntarily leave power. And of course, because I've already explained to you that, you know, since Sekitim left, Botswana introduced a new system where presidents serve two terms and they leave. So that's what we've always heard. But there are many paradoxes there. There are many contradictions, right? When you begin to look behind, you see, you know, a system that is not meant to advance democratic practice, but that is actually meant to subvert it. And I'll give you one example. You know, the whole system of transition, presidential transitions, provides a very powerful incumbency advantage to the ruling party. Right? On the face of it, you know, presidents leave peacefully, quietly, but it gives the ruling party 1 year head start ahead of the election, right? Because the president leaves a year before, a new president comes in. Almost what's been happening in South Africa here. But of course, here it's not voluntary. Here people get recalled. But what it means essentially is that the incoming president has 1 year head start. And then they have the benefit of incumbency when they contest the election the following year. That's an advantage to the ruling party. It's a disadvantage to all other parties.
Yeah, yeah. You also highlighted something very, in fact, your article also, your piece also highlighted something that I, to be honest with you, did not know, that, you know, DPS has got considerable political power in Botswana, to a point where, you know, what we saw in South Africa with the Guptas is actually normalized in Botswana. That's exactly what DPS does. Appointing ministers or influencing who should be appointed where and how, in as far as political positions are concerned. That took me aback.
Oh, yes. You know, the Beer story is shocking, right? So De Beers, if you know the history, De Beers started prospecting for diamonds in the 70s, late 60s, 70s. And managed to find diamonds in Orapa, in the northern part of Botswana. Initially, the deals were not as fair, but after some negotiations, an agreement was reached to have a 50-50 share of the diamonds between DBS and the government, and they formed a company called Debswana.
Yes.
Now, basically, this company is a joint company, jointly owned by De Beers and the government at 50-50%. But in essence, what's been happening is that this relationship is not a fair one. It's not an equal relationship. It's skewed in favor of De Beers. So for a long, long time, the government didn't even control the price of diamonds. You need to understand De Beers is one of the largest diamond mining companies in the world, together with, I forget the other one, the Russian one. And De Beers has actually been found guilty of price fixing. I don't know if you know that, by the European Union, of fixing the prices of diamonds. Because they've got the monopoly on the price on diamonds across the world. And the largest part of De Beers' operation has always been in Botswana. So De Beers contributes 80% of the revenue that Botswana makes in the country. So they're a significant player. It employs about 5,000 people. It literally runs. It contributes to the largest part of the economy. So it has a great deal of power. And with that power comes a great deal of influence. And De Beers has actually admitted to supporting the Botswana Democratic Party, the BDP, the ruling party. They didn't even make any you know, they didn't hide this, that they supported Masire, they supported the you know, the BDP. And what is even worse, right, is that so the role of government for a long, long time has been to simply audit the diamonds. So, like I said, it's not an equal relationship. De Beers has the technical people, They're the ones who know what they mine. They're the ones that decide the quality of what they mine. Mm. And for a long time, remember that these diamonds were not even processed or polished or sorted in Botswana. They were simply taken out to be polished, sorted elsewhere.
Mm.
So even in terms of the reporting of how much is going out, the government was at a huge disadvantage. And in 2016, a report was developed by an investigative report by Khadija Sharif that showed that over the previous 10 years, there was evidence that the Beers had actually taken out over $1 billion a year, which the government may or may not have known. Now, that's a significant amount of money, Tabiso, if you think that Botswana has a population of 2.4 million.
Mm.
But it's still also quite a poor country, right?
Yeah.
Because over 1.2 million people live in poverty.
Mm.
And because of the power De Beers has, to extract, to sort, to export, to report as and how it wishes, it's been able to do this. But if that was only the issue, then maybe that wouldn't be such a big problem, because then the question would be, hey, let's empower the government to take a stronger position and get a fairer shape.
Yeah.
But the question is that because of the relationship between De Beers and the ruling party, there's every possibility that there's a collusion between them, right?
Mm.
So now you actually have Botswana owning a share of De Beers as well. So now it's now very murky, right? It gets very, very murky. So it's a public-private partnership in which the public has a share in the private. It all gets very, very murky. And you begin to say to yourself, well, what is it that we know? What is it that we don't know? And this deal is not public knowledge. It's a secret deal. You don't know who's getting what and how much.
Yeah.
It becomes a problem.
You also, talk about karma, among others, being embroiled in scandals, holiday homes, expensive entertaining friends and stuff like that, and buying things that the Botswana government cannot afford. I mean, you highlight how two military, very expensive fighter jets were bought and so on and so forth. Something that we've also never been privy to. We were given this rosy picture that this is a military man who exudes discipline and charm, who is a pilot in his spare time, he flies around and so on and so forth, but hardly ever, the details that you also brought up out.
Well, I don't know what papers you read, Tabiso. That is the thing, right?
Yeah.
So basically, yes, Karma, he comes from a military background, many years the military commander. And people forget this, right? Karma was military commander for a long time. And then after that, he was vice president for 10 years. And then after that, he was president for another 10 years. That's almost 30 years.
Hmm.
There's got to be a problem. But more importantly, right, what we've seen is that under Karma, we've seen what was basically a fairly liberal soft kind of executive power transform into something a little bit harsher. And if you follow Botswana media as a media person, you'd have seen that under Karma, a lot of journalists were arrested for reporting stuff, just corruption, stuff on corruption. And because when Karma came in, he set up this DISS, which is the Department of Intelligence.
Intelligence, yeah.
And security, and it began to be utilized in a way that we see utilized in other countries like Zimbabwe, and in a very unpleasant manner.
Mm.
Going around arresting people, intimidating people for just asking questions, just doing normal journalism work. We even had a time when judges were suspended by Karma, unprecedented stuff. So not just one, but several judges suspended and forced to apologize before being reinstated. So you had a military man who became the vice president, who became the president, but who also happens to be the chief of his people, of the Bangwato, who many complained that he was running the country as if he was running his chiefdom. True or not true, but there were serious concerns about this conflation of roles you know, this authoritarian streak. Of course, Kama is no longer president, but he's now fallen out with his successor. Some argue that because he wanted to rule from
continue,
the grave,
yeah,
so to speak. Well, rule from the grave, you know, tell him what to do. This is what you get, the sense you get when you follow the fight, the very public fight.
Yeah.
And my source, of course, for some of these things about Kama dealing with, you know, with a very heavy hand is actually it's Botswana journalists who've done all these reports, and I cite them in my article, you know,
yeah.
and they know better because they've been on the receiving end of Kama and Kama's policies.
Yeah, yeah. How did they get the PR right? Because it seems as if they got it right somehow.
How did they get what right? Sorry, Tavo.
PR, public relations.
Well, two things. They had a lot of things that looked really good, right, happening there. So they had regular elections. Great stuff. Many countries for a long, long time. This is since 1965. They've had regular elections. Not many countries have been doing that. So many countries have a general who rules, or you know, a ruling party, one-party state, and whatever. No elections. So they had regular elections. They had a system. And remember that this presidential limit wasn't introduced until after 1980. When did Masire leave? I need to get my facts right. But after Masire left, when Mokhaya came in, that's when. Because Kama Senior, Kama's father, was president for 23 years. And Masire was president for 19. That's hardly democratic, right? I mean, that's a hell of a long time. Of course, the British system allows this, but it's terrible. But they had regular elections, so that made it look good. They also managed their diamond revenue in a seemingly good way because they took the money and put it outside. They looked after it. They had the sovereign wealth fund. Because the policy of the government, we're not going to spend the money, we're going to keep it for future generations. Of course, that's why they didn't develop the country, right? They didn't develop infrastructure for a very long time, until quite recently they started pouring that money into infrastructure. You know.
Because there's quite a bit of that in Gaborone, you know.
I beg your pardon?
I'm saying there's quite a bit of that if you enter into Gaborone. I was there 2 years or so ago, and I saw a big difference from the last time I went. Infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, but go back 15, 20 years, it wasn't like that.
Yes,
15,
absolutely.
20 years, the money was just being put aside. You know, and it wasn't, and it was being put aside out. Nobody knew how much there was. Of course, they would report it. Were they over-reporting, under-reporting? Remember, this is money they were making with De Beers. So I think that there were a lot of good things that they said, which people never questioned. This is the problem.
Yeah. So it seems as if there's some kind of a breakaway, because Masisi is now saying, you are not going to tell me what to do. I'm the president now. You have a Kama now who is cozying up with their opposition. You also have, I mean, when I was in Botswana, I and there was a 10-year gap before the last time. It was 2 years ago, and I saw a lot of differences. I mean, in Botswana, if you had a wedding, for instance, by 6 p.m. should be shutting it down and everybody going home. But of late, people party until 12, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Things have changed quite a bit. And you could tell it's because people come to South Africa and they go to other countries to and study. When they go back home, they implement the lifestyle and whatever the case may be. So it's a changing Botswana. But to what extent does this changing Botswana in terms of attitude and everything else speak to the political change that we are even seeing in terms of the dynamics in Botswana?
That's true. And a lot of the restrictive environment was Kama, right? So you're quite right to say that I haven't been since he left. So that there's a noticeable shift in just the way people feel freer. I mean, even establishments that sell alcohol, you know, they were being shut down at before 10, et cetera. And there was a huge hike in taxes on alcohol. So really very paternalistic, paternalistic sort of attitude, right, of how to run a government. Now, the politics of it is simply this, right? So Kama has fallen out with Masisi. He's formed his own party, Botswana Patriotic Front.
Mm.
Now, what is unknown is the extent of the damage this party is likely to make on not just Masisi but on BDP.
Mm.
Now Kama is chief of the Bamangwato. And of course, Botswana is not just the Ngwatos. There are many, many, many other tribes.
Mm.
The Ngwatos are the ones that are widely known, but there's many, you know, as you know.
Mm.
But the fundamental question is going to be, to what extent are the Ngwatos, remember, he came in to show up support for the Bamangwato in the central province, in rural areas. Where at some point where the BDP was weak.
Mm.
And because he was the chief, he was able to win. He's popular in the rural areas because he's the chief, he's their chief. So the question is going to be, to what extent is he going to dent the hegemony of BDP?
Yeah.
There's a huge risk that he will, right? There's a huge, huge risk that he will. And if he does, BDP may lose power. But the point is that Kama is not as loved in urban areas as he is in rural areas.
Mm.
As I told you, you've just mentioned yourself that, you know, the urban areas have now loosened up after he left.
Mm.
People are, you know, freer to do what they want. But now the fundamental question is that part of the problem, which I highlight in my opinion piece, is the electoral system, the problematic of the electoral system. So Botswana has a first-past-the-post system, unlike South Africa, which has proportional representation.
Yeah, winner takes all.
And you know the difference. Yes, it's winner take all, first-past-the-post. So you win. When you win everything.
Mm.
When you lose everything.
Mm.
Now, this is the fascinating thing. In 2014, let's talk before that. Before 2014, Botswana... the BDP has always won between 51 and 55% of the vote, right?
Mm.
Now, in 2014, the BDP, in numbers, they won 320,000 votes. They got 320,000 votes who voted for them.
Mm.
Compared to the opposition, plus independents, collectively, who got 370,000. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right. So, but in terms of seats, so out of a possible 57 seats in parliament, now BDP got 37. So 320,000 votes gave them 37 seats.
Mm.
Now, the 370,000 votes that the opposition plus the independents only got them 20 seats.
Mm.
So BDP got 17 more seats.
Yeah, but the opposition does not question the electoral system. I've never heard them do, actually.
I've spoken to some of the opposition leaders when I meet them, and I've said, you know, you need to fix your electoral system because that's what the problem is, right? Mm. So you're never going to get... Because people go and vote, and their vote doesn't translate into anything.
Mm.
That's basically the advantage of the system here in South Africa. The South African system has disadvantages. We can talk about that another time. But there's a certain advantage to either combining the proportional representation with first past the post in some way, or adopting a proportional representation. Proportional representation is great in fragmented societies. So where there's multiple ethnicities, where there's, you know, where there's different regions, when you want to manage power in a way that you people are included, where historically people have been excluded from political processes, like in South Africa. That's why you have a vibrant opposition, which is a small opposition, which is what you need. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't have the EFF, for example, here in South Africa. You would literally just have the ANC. They would still be dominating, and there wouldn't be any opposition in parliament if you didn't have proportional representation.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm sure the ANC, if you ask them, they would want to go back to first principles. But that's another story for another day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sposabi Malunga, thank you for spending time with us. We really, really appreciate your insights. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you to your listeners.
Thank you very much, Sipho Malunga, the Executive Director of Open Society Initiative for Southern Africa, demystifying some of the myths in his articles about Botswana. I don't know. I mean, are you a Botswana from Botswana?
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.